This is the Movie Hall of Fame, or movie hopping, or whatever you want to call it, for Monday, Tuesday, April 29th to 30th, somewhere in that range. Somewhere. I feel like I'm being very wishy-washy about this introduction, and I apologize.
I don't know what that was.
I don't know what the show's called, when it's being released. I have no idea.
This is how many Drew Careys. What are you talking about?
Wrong theme music. I don't know what's going on. I don't know where we're broadcasting from, what we're talking about, who you are, who I am.
I traveled all the way down to South Carolina to visit Nico. That's what I did.
Long story, as far as that's concerned.
Yeah.
That's a story for another podcast. Hey, guys, how are you? We're talking movies today with Adam. That's the only thing I know about this show, for sure. We will discuss movies.
With Adam.
With Adam.
Okay.
I hope. I'm actually excited to talk about movies with you today, my friend.
Why? What is so compelling about talking with me about movies, of all people?
Well, I think we're going to hit a pretty interesting crossroads today. I think we're going to have a nice conversation. Because I don't think we're in total agreement about the movie we're talking about today.
I mean, maybe closer than you think. I don't know.
Really?
I don't know. Maybe.
Okay. So here's the deal. We're going to talk about Avengers: Endgame. Mm-hmm. And we'll see how long this goes. And if we have time for more stuff, we'll do more stuff. But for now, we're talking Avengers.
Yes. It's going to be a nice treat for you listeners.
Yes. This is a movie that was released this past weekend. Uh-huh. Talking about it now. We both saw it opening weekend. Uh-huh. I saw it Friday. You saw it Saturday. Mm-hmm. We braved the crowds. I went to a screening 11 p.m.
I saw your Snap story, by the way. You driving around the parking lot in the rain like a fucking maniac, looking for parking where there was none.
Dude, I felt like I was in like Mystic River or something. Like I was just...
What?
I don't know. It was just a very dark scene for me. I felt like I was going to have to make a decision that I would soon regret.
And you thought of Mystic River.
I don't know. It just popped into my head. It was torrential downpour. I knew I shouldn't have been there.
I stabbed my best friend, kind of.
Something was telling me, Nico, run away from this theater as fast as you possibly can. But I stayed. I soldiered through.
Stay away from this theater?
Yeah.
Were there people with red hair and guns and body armor calling themselves the Joker?
That's a very dark joke.
I don't care.
That's a very dark. That's a very dark and not too timely joke. That's exactly 7 years too late.
Yes,
but regardless,
is it 7 years at this point?
I think it's been 7 years.
Jesus,
2012 since Aurora.
Yeah. Ooh, wow. Holy crap.
Yeah, 7 years right. Since then.
No, I can make that joke now. It's been 7 years.
Well, it's funny now because of that event, and it's not really like brought up in all the like big shootings that there have been. I mean, it was kind of significant at the time, but we for some reason have forgotten about it. That's why we don't have midnight showings.
Is it?
Yeah. That's why there's no such thing as a midnight showing anymore.
Wow.
Remember that? Because it used to be, and I saw Dark Knight Rises at midnight. That was the first time that movie was screened. Thursday night. And so it was a big thing for the premiere.
I see.
But after that happened, they just started staggering it, so there wasn't a single premiere time anymore.
How does that make it any different from any other premiere? What is different? What about midnight gives you the motivation to go and shoot up a theater?
Okay, fair point. I'll admit that's a fair point.
What is so different about that than, say, I don't know, lunchtime?
Well, I think there is an eventization of the midnight premiere that doesn't necessarily exist at 8 o'clock.
Sure.
Because people are sort of staggering their way into the theater at different times, as opposed to if it's midnight, that is when the maximum occupancy is going to be at that one theater at the same time.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Or you could just wait until like a really, really popular movie comes out where you're guaranteed, no matter what, for like a week straight, that there's going to be a packed house.
Okay, here's what I don't like, that we're daydreaming about shooting up a movie theater.
What, you don't daydream about shooting
up? No, I think we should stop this immediately before our podcast gets flagged.
I'm just saying that the guy who chose to do that is kind of a fucking idiot.
Agreed. Good take, Adam Hall.
See how I brought that around?
Solid take. Solid take. Okay, can we talk about the goddamn movie? So sure. I get there at 11 p.m., packed house, can't find parking. Torrential downpour, yes. Can't find parking. We get into the theater. I have to wait in line. I obviously pre-ordered my ticket. Mm-hmm. I have to wait in line in order to get to the machine to redeem the ticket I already ordered 3 days in advance. Mm-hmm. Then I had to wait in line additionally to get my ticket ripped at the like at the front of the entrance.
Okay.
So there have never been this many barriers to entry for me to see a movie before, and it was at 11 p.m. on a Friday night.
Where did you sit when you saw the movie?
Good seats.
Good for you.
IMAX. Yeah, I pre-ordered.
Because I did not really get good seats. I was in handicapped spots.
This is a good life tip, though. This is a pretty good life hack.
What, mine?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no.
You should share this tip here.
No. You can do it whenever you want. It's fine. It's just if... Okay, so what happened was we were pre-ordering tickets for a packed house. There was nowhere else to sit. But then one of our friends is like, hey, I used to work at the theater. You are allowed to take handicapped spots. However, if a person in a wheelchair comes in and says, hey, I want this seat, you have to give the seat up.
And then where do you have to sit at that point?
Fuck if I know, but they get the seat.
What do you mean? You're allowed to buy it, but then if someone just wants to claim it like a house squatter, it's just theirs.
It's theirs, man. So there was nothing we could have done.
You're really rolling the dice here. You're gambling $12.
And it's amazing because she was like, okay, yeah, this never happens. No one ever comes in and just takes those seats because they're shitty seats and you have to break your neck in order to see it.
Wait a minute, I don't understand. Do wheelchair people have to pay for the ticket?
Good question. I don't know. It didn't seem that way.
Hang on. I really want to dig into this. If you go to the theater and you go to the seating chart, the tickets that you purchased are grayed out. Those are not available on the kiosk, correct?
I guess not.
Because you bought them.
Yeah.
So that implies that a person in a wheelchair could theoretically wheel into the theater without a ticket stub?
I suppose, yeah.
And commandeer your seat?
I think the point is if they look at you and they're like, wow, this person has perfectly usable legs, we're going to run them over and kick them out of their seats. That's the idea. And
man, I need to dig into this more.
Well, it actually happened to one of the people we went with. Now, the person was not in a wheelchair. They were just handicapped, in heavy quotes. Handicapped people. And yeah, they had to
They call them handicapable now. That's the new PC phrase.
Can they climb mountains and shit?
Yeah,
now?
They're handicapable.
Do they give them those crazy
They're
Avengers?
Just capable.
Yeah. They're just fine.
Dude, I hate that.
We're gonna put you handicapped people right on the refrigerator.
You can't change the word handicapped to something that doesn't mean handicapped because it hurts people's feelings. It's like saying, hey, Adam, you're a short guy. Wait a minute. Time out, Nico. That is not the politically correct term. I'm actually a tall guy now. Handicapable is not the same thing as handicapped. They just changed the definition of the word.
Yeah.
Anyway.
People are stupid. People are fucking idiots. And yeah, no, this whole
but you got into the theater.
I got into the theater and it was cool. And I mean, it wasn't the worst seating I've ever had, but it was interesting. We were all kind of separated and it was clear that a part of our party did not want to be sitting there because they didn't realize how close to the screen we actually were. So a third of us were really pissed off and the rest of us are like, just fucking deal with it.
Yeah.
So
okay, well, congratulations on you then.
I
had to go like 4 days in advance to pre-order those things.
Gay.
So this movie made small fortune.
It made a little bit of money.
A small fortune this weekend.
It made a decent amount of money.
I mean, it could bankrupt what? 4 third world countries?
It could buy them.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, and then some. It could buy about 5 of them.
Yeah, I mean, it could maybe destroy the entire United States economy if it really tried.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you should just invest all of your money in Avengers Endgame tickets because it made $357 million in 3 days. That is like, I didn't think that was possible.
People are out of their goddamn minds.
I think this was sort of the consensus among the media. Theaters were not equipped to handle these size crowds.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow they did. But like, I know just like anecdotally when I went, the machines were running out of paper and the popcorn was sort of on low supply.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these staff members seemed overworked.
Oh,
like
God.
It was, and it's funny, like the second people moved out of the theater, they just funneled in a new crowd.
Mm-hmm.
So they were cleaning these floors and these seats at like record time. Like, it's like unbelievable. And of course, like, the screenings went till 2 a.m. Yet for some reason, every single showing of this movie was sold out. I cannot believe this happened.
How do you prepare your staff for an event like this?
You don't.
There's a great episode of South Park where the mall cops are standing by the gates, and it's like Black Friday, and the people are coming to the doors like zombies, and they're just like congregating in like the millions and whatnot, and they're essentially prepping for the Black Friday event itself as if they're going to die.
Right. As if the zombies are coming.
Yes.
Remember, aim for the head. You have to break the spinal cortex.
Except they're like stop tripping over people. Go this way.
Listen, I worked retail on Black Friday. Have you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I worked at Target on Black Friday, and it was hell.
Oh, I did Bed Bath & Beyond, and people are just old jackasses who need to die 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But
no, it's a big event. It's the Super Bowl for retail, essentially. But you're right. That's basically what happened at the movie theaters yesterday. The previous record was somewhere in the ballpark of $250 million on opening weekend.
Wow.
That was set by Avengers Infinity War last year. And I think like the notion that a movie could pass $300 million was crazy enough. And it, again, broke its own record by $100 million. Made $357 million. It's crazy how insane people are for this franchise and this particular movie.
It's like, this is like overload at this point. People need to calm down.
Oh, I want to talk to you about what you did, though, this week. You went on Thursday night while everybody was seeing Avengers. You need to share to the listening public what you did.
It wasn't my choice.
Well, I mean, it kind of was. You were there.
I agreed to it.
Don't talk your way out of
this. I mean,
it
was consensual.
Yes. Okay.
It was perfectly fine, good stuff in a theater.
What'd you do?
Well, everyone listening to this is like,
what did you do?
What is he talking about?
Confess to what you did.
I saw Hellboy.
That's a weird thing to do.
It is a weird thing to do.
Especially on Avengers weekend.
My brother had been wanting to see this movie for a little while.
Why?
Because, I don't know.
Dude, that trailer looked so bad.
Yeah, but
it looked painfully bad.
My brother got back from a trip from Washington, D.C. I hadn't seen him in a little while. I'm like, okay, yeah, let's go see a movie. It'd be great. And he's like, let's go see Hellboy. I'm like, okay. I mean, I love Guillermo del Toro's first two films. Like, I love those movies.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, again, this movie looked, you know, terrible, but at the same time, I'm like, okay, it's Neil Marshall, he's directed a few films that I really love, and he's directed some great episodes of Game of Thrones, so, yeah, maybe this will be okay, and it won't be complete bullshit, and then I go and see it.
The guy Ian McKellen is in it, so that should help.
Ian McKellen is not in this movie.
Oh, not Ian McKellen, Ian McShane.
That's great.
I apologize.
There's a hilarious scene with Ian McShane as like a fleshy ghost thing that comes from a girl's mouth, and that's where
is that not what Ian McShane normally plays in movies?
I guess that's fair.
Yeah. I always think fleshy growth coming out of a woman's mouth when I see that man.
Well, he does play the villain in I hate those jokes that get funnier the more you think about it.
What
you just said just made me chuckle.
Oh, okay.
Ian McShane plays the villain in Kung Fu Panda.
Oh, right.
So there's that, you know.
Fair enough. Not one of my five favorite Ian McShane performances, I have to be honest.
I like Ian McShane. He's also in Death Race, which is the best movie ever.
I've never seen Death Race.
Oh, it's incredible.
Is it?
It's a Paul W.S. Anderson movie.
Oh, no.
The guy who made Alien vs. Predator.
Alien vs. Predator.
Yeah. Great film.
Great in John Wick, though. And great in Deadwood. And the best. Great in that one episode of Game of Thrones.
Not the best in Hellboy, though.
Bad, huh?
Pretty, like, what the fuck are you doing in Hellboy, I suppose.
Give me 30-second review on Hellboy, because I really don't want to talk about this piece of garbage.
Well, it's the worst movie I've ever seen.
Okay.
And it's a complete pile of trash. It deserves to be shoved back down to hell. No, I mean, it's...
Literally.
Yeah. No, the movie is incompetent. The tone is vile and ugly. And it's a mean-spirited thing. It doesn't always know what it wants to be. It doesn't know how to play up drama. It doesn't know how to transition from scene to scene. Shit just happens. It's a mess of a post-process. The CGI is offensive. The characters are offensive. There's no story. And it kind of feels like you're watching Airplane, except it's taking itself seriously. So, yeah. Like, if I didn't know any better.
So, I take it that you didn't like it that much.
Not really.
Okay.
Not really. It was not good. In fact, I kind of hated it. And here's the thing. Ryan, my brother, is not particularly well-versed when it comes to, like, understanding film, as I am. I'm a genius, and I know everything about film.
Right.
But Ryan... I'm in a mood today.
Yeah, clearly.
but then Ryan comes out of the film, you know, and one of his favorite films is Deep Blue Sea. I mean, and I can't blame him for that. Deep Blue Sea is fantastic, but it's not exactly, you know, No Country for Old Men.
Right.
And even he...
It's for the plebeians.
Sure. Deep Blue Sea is great. I don't want to throw any shade at Deep Blue Sea, but I'm just...
No, it's for the common man.
I'm just trying to talk in relative terms here. Anyway.
I get you. My brother's the same way.
Yes.
Yeah.
He comes out of this movie and he's like, that movie was awful, Adam. I'm sorry I took you to this. And okay. I'm like, don't worry about it, man. It was great to see you, even if we had to see a shitty film.
Even if David Harbour's massive chin got in our way.
Like, people were going easy on the movie when I read reviews or listened to reviews or watched.
Really?
It. I'm like...
Then we did not see the same reviews.
Like no, people were going way too easy on this movie.
Really?
People were like, yeah, it sucks, but it's not nearly as bad as some people say. Yeah, it's not a good movie, but there's some good, fun action. I'm like, no.
Razzie material?
Yeah, this movie is awful.
Okay. All right. No, I believe it. That trailer was one of the worst trailers I'd seen in a long time.
It
looked really bad.
And
you know what it looked like? And tell me if I'm accurate with this. It kind of looked like Deadpool karaoke, except not as fun. Like, sort of just vulgar for the sake of being vulgar.
The violence is definitely that. Really fucked up violence. Like some of the goriest things I've seen in a long time, actually.
Really?
In film. I'm like, whoa, that's nuts. But again, serves like quite literally no purpose. It's just there to be, you know, fun violence, and I don't know what the point is.
Yeah, I was not looking for an unfunny version of Deadpool. That was just not, and that's what this trailer looked like to me.
I don't want to call it Deadpool. It kind of reminds me of Blade, if you ever saw Blade.
I haven't.
Except trying to be a little bit funnier. Like, it feels like it would have come out in that era.
Okay.
Like, it's that same sort of like late 90s, early 2000s kind of feel, except it's an incompetent mess.
Okay.
And the movie is, like I said, it's just an ugly movie. That's the best way I can describe it. The film is just ugly.
All right.
You know?
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
Well, it's okay, because we saw another good superhero movie this weekend.
We did.
And so I can't wait to talk about that.
Yes.
Here we go. Avengers Endgame. Let's get right into it. I have thoughts.
You have thoughts.
You have thoughts.
I have thoughts.
Those thoughts may clash.
Mm-hmm.
We might agree.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. All right, give me the ball for like 5 seconds. No, 50 seconds.
Let's explore. No, go. Do your thing.
I need ISO. I got him.
Okay.
Just hand me the rock.
I got him.
Hand me the rock. I'll take it to the hole, okay? I went to this movie very skeptical, because I am skeptical of most Marvel movies. You and I have shared this skepticism for a number of years. We talked about it last week as we did the Movie Hall of Fame with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. These movies feel factory made at this point. They are not offensive in the way that maybe the DC movies are. They are, you know, competently made. Competent directors and competent actors are at the helm here. But these movies, over recent years, have sort of lacked a certain amount of bite and personality that we look for when we go to a major motion picture. I was especially skeptical because I saw a number of tweets ahead of time, all the nerds that got to see this movie a day earlier, and they were talking about how emotional they got. We cried at the end. What a perfect ending to a perfect series. And I rolled my eyes. But I went to see the movie nonetheless because I have a fear of missing out. And I have to see these things right away. I was fully prepared to go into this movie, watch 3 fucking hours of superhero nonsense, and then come out the other end and laugh and mock those emotional pussies. I was ready to take them to task. And then I started watching the movie. And I expected maybe a couple pee breaks here or there. Never came. And I began to sink into my seat, my beautiful recliner at AMC Theaters. And by the end of this 3-hour adventure, I must admit, Adam Hall, tears streaming down my face. Wet, juicy tears. Your boy got emotional at the end of this movie, and I am so ashamed. I feel so much shame. I feel like Cersei Lannister walking naked through the streets of Westeros. I need a bell ringing behind me. I am not proud of the fact that I got emotional, but this movie worked on me on every level, and I'm ready to nitpick this thing to death. I'm ready to talk about its faults, but I really like this movie, and I am excited to explore why.
Okay.
Okay.
Do I have
the floor is yours.
All right. Well, I mean, I guess the short version for me is that, no, I'm with you.
Oh, whoa.
I'm with you for like, I'm going, how many? 20 asterisks.
Okay. No, listen, my experience was not asterisk free either. I'm with you. Yes.
I think this it's a very good movie. Very good movie. And I think for the most part it works quite well for everything that we're trying to accomplish. I got my money's worth, and it's a very satisfying conclusion to this franchise that I started, you know, over 10 years ago.
Yeah, 11, right?
Yep, and it's emotionally very satisfying, especially that ending. And I'll admit, I got pretty choked up. I'm a fan of certain characters. Can I just spoil this?
Well, oh, yeah, let's do this right now.
Spoiler.
Hashtag don't spoil Endgame. All bets are off now. Spoilers. Yep. Turn it off, watch the movie, and then come back, listen to the podcast. We're going to spoil the shit out of this.
Okay, good.
Spoiler alert is in effect. Go ahead.
So Tony Stark is a woman, and
I'm so proud of him.
Me too.
It really just warmed my cockles at the end. I cannot help but bawl my eyes out every time someone just
It
becomes their true selves.
And Black Panther is actually white.
All right, enough of this. Enough of this nonsense.
No, Iron Man fucking dies, man.
Yeah.
He dies. And it was, it worked very well for me.
It worked.
And yes, when people were saying it gets emotional, I was like, well, someone's got to die. I know it's got to be one of the main ones, but who the hell is it going to be? And I'll be honest, I didn't really think they were going to kill Iron Man. I thought they were going to kill Cap.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, thinking about it now in retrospect, I guess it makes sense because I guess it's more Iron Man's franchise than anybody else's.
Yes.
When you think about it. But
as much as they tried making it Cap's franchise, he just never quite clicked in the way that Robert Downey Jr. did.
No, because you can't love Cap the way you love Iron Man.
No.
Absolutely not.
No.
And that's part of the thing. It's like, wow, like, ugh, like this is my buddy and he's gone, you know?
Yeah.
You really felt that. It was great. But I mean, it's not just that, though. I mean, the action sequences are a ton of fun, and the film is very long. And
yes.
We'll get to that.
It is long.
But for the most part, it's not, I wouldn't call the film a drag, necessarily. And there's a lot of stuff in it that I was surprised to see in one of these movies, in a superhero film in general, especially in that first hour.
Right.
Which I quite loved. And yeah, overall, it's a solid, I don't know, it's 4 out of 5 stars for me.
That's really good.
That's
glowing
it's
praise,
a
4 out of 5 stars.
Good movie, very good movie.
It is a very good movie.
Yep.
So I am, I think, about as sensitive to 3-hour run times as anyone.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my jam, man. I like a nice, short, concise story, and this never felt like it dragged to me. I really didn't have a problem with any of it.
All right.
I thought it, generally speaking, although like the plot didn't necessarily move at a frenetic pace, there was an emotional thrust to it that I could feel since the first scene, since the cold open with Jeremy Renner.
Yeah.
That it just carried it through for me. And I did not want to leave these characters. And I guess that's something new. Maybe this was like a revelation. Or maybe it's just like a weird version of Stockholm Syndrome. I'm not quite sure. But I have spent over 40 hours with these people. And I didn't realize exactly how much I cared about them until this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't want to say goodbye. And I don't know. Like, I think it got the better end of me there. Because I've been complaining about how redundant these movies have gotten. And I get Captain America's shtick. And I get Tony Stark's shtick. And Iron Man 3 I didn't care for all that much, and Civil War I didn't care for all that much, and I was kind of ready for these things to conclude. But when it finally came time to say goodbye, I had a hard time separating. So maybe that speaks to the effectiveness of this entire franchise, if anything else. The movie was very good, but there was a lot of earned history, I felt, with these people.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought they paid that off effectively, especially in that first hour. Both of us were very glowing about that first hour.
Mm-hmm.
The CGI third act, I could sort of take or leave.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, it was satisfying that all of these people were in the same battle sequence together. But the first hour where they just sort of slowed down and let these characters ruminate with their emotions, the stuff with Nebula and Tony in outer space was awesome, for as short-lived as that was. The stuff with Tony and his daughter and Paltrow at the beginning was so moving, and all such an interesting choice. Ant-Man reuniting with his daughter at the beginning.
All the family stuff is great.
Cap going to the AA meeting, essentially. Just effective all around. And I guess that was really new for this franchise, right? We had not had a movie like this.
That's what I'm talking about, though. The sort of down-to-earthness, the humanity in scenes like that, which you don't see in any of the Avengers films.
Right.
Absolutely not. You don't see that in superhero films in general, though. Which
maybe
is nice.
Logan.
Yeah, Logan.
Maybe only Logan.
Yeah.
Had I seen anything like that before? Maybe the original Spider-Man movies too.
Yeah, I would say the original Spider-Man films. And honestly, I mean, this is not a criticism of The Dark Knight, but I wouldn't even put it on that level.
Right.
There's a certain level of the stakes in The Dark Knight that are not nearly as small as that first hour, I suppose. Because the first hour is just wallowing in misery. That's all it really is.
Right.
It's just like, we fucked up and we're just kind of dealing with it. And here's how we're dealing with it. And say, like, the AA meeting. It's like, oh, wow. Like, I've literally never seen this before in a superhero film. That's kind of interesting. It works very, very well for that first hour. If we're getting into criticisms, though, I will say that as soon as they decide to start, like going at it, and going after some goal, whatever it ends up being. Well, it's the Infinity Stones.
The time travel stuff.
Yeah. As soon as they start dealing with time travel, for me, it starts to lull quite a bit.
It's funny that you use the word stakes for that first hour, because that is probably the single biggest criticism that anyone has ever had about these movies, is that they lack a certain emotional stake.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just sort of shorthand for people saying not enough characters die. Like, is that one and the same for you? Are they synonymous? Or,
it's part of the stakes.
I mean, give me your take.
I wouldn't say that. It's just, it could just be the characters losing what they set out to do.
Right.
I suppose you don't have to die, but if they don't accomplish their goal, and that goal is very important to them, there's a sense of stakes.
Because in that first act, not much really happens.
No.
And the characters that died have already died, and you know that they're coming back. So this isn't really about feeling the death of these people. It's just about feeling where these people are in their lives emotionally they're coping with it. And I think that's enough of a stake for me to be invested.
Yes, I know.
And I think that's we get into a little bit of trouble, and I include myself in this, for expecting so much death all of the time because that's what film is supposed to be. I think stakes can come in a number of forms, and that's another thing that this movie proved to me. And it proved me wrong about where the Russo brothers are and what their intentions are for these movies.
Mm-hmm.
I think they really listened to those criticisms and put them to good work here.
Yeah.
And I really liked it for that reason.
Oh, they certainly love what they're doing. But that's what I'm saying, though. I'm talking about just the fact that what they're doing here is just dealing with what happened. It's not necessarily they're trying to accomplish anything other than, you know, their own emotional turmoil and getting over that.
Right.
And it's stakes, like you said, but it's a different sense of stakes.
Yeah.
That's what's important. And again, it doesn't transition back into what we're used to until time travel gets introduced.
Yeah.
And like I said, that first hour was really, really working for me. I don't know if it worked for everyone I saw the film with, but for me.
No, and that's also my understanding of it. From some of the people that I've talked to about it, they sort of thought that first hour dragged.
When I came out of the film, I had most of us, Abby included, thought, yeah, it's kind of slow.
Yeah.
The film overall, not just, I think maybe they were hung on to that. They hung on to that first half. That first hour, maybe a little too much. But
also coming off of Infinity War, this is a totally different movie than Infinity War. And that was so funny to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to give, I've given these guys a lot of flack in the past. I got to give a big tip of the cap to Joe and Anthony Russo here. Mm-hmm. I thought they did a hell of a job with both of these movies.
Yes.
And they addressed another one of our big criticisms that these movies don't have their own identity often, that they just sort of feel like bits of the same whole. This movie, although it doesn't like stand alone on a plot level, feels very different than Infinity War. And if you watch them back to back, it wouldn't feel like a 6-hour movie. It would feel like two very distinct episodes of this franchise. So I do want to give them a lot of credit. And I thought they did a really good job here on an emotional level.
I agree.
They start off the movie. I thought it was an interesting choice. Jeremy Renner on the ranch with him and Cardellini and the kids evaporating into dust, Renner being the only one left.
Really chilling.
I thought that was a great, great way to open, and it set right away, this is what the movie is going to be. Mm-hmm. It's not going to feel as big as the last one. We're going to deal with the fallout of the last movie. And then they also, the song choices, the song that they played into, I didn't recognize the song, but it felt a lot more intimate and less epic than Infinity War. And every scene just felt smaller. Which is ironic since the movie just erupts into the biggest CGI battle these movies have ever seen. But up until that, I was really digging what they were doing.
I agree. And what was I going to say about that opening? I'm trying to remember now because you just went on a good little spiel. I was going to say, like, I guess I appreciated the distinctness because that's something I like you just said, that I've been very critical about, particularly recently with these Marvel films. But it does have its own voice, I suppose. And the interesting thing about this one, for me at least, is that to me it's... I don't really mean this as a criticism. I think it's a very messy film.
Really?
But in a good way.
Okay.
I think from a plot level, it kind of has to be.
Yes.
Because that's how it's moving. It's moving back and forth from various perspectives that are kind of disconnected in a lot of ways. And... It sort of jumps around a lot, and it eventually steers back into one cohesive whole towards the end. But for the most of the film, we're doing a lot of like Game of Thrones action, where we're just kind of going all over the place.
Right.
Where there's a through line that's important, but it's not necessarily the concern at the moment. Each kind of individual story for me had its own kind of thrust, which is really nice.
Right. I agree with that.
So it's weird because I usually hate films that get too messy. Where it's just like, I don't know what's going on, but I didn't find it confusing.
Well, given what the undertaking was here,
yeah,
it's kind of hard to make a movie with this many characters in it not feel a bit messy.
Yes.
Like, close to impossible.
I know.
And the only way you can do it is by shortchanging some of the characters, and that's something that I thought they did incredibly well. Every character got their moment.
Yeah.
And each of those moments worked. So, like, it would have been easy to just do 3 hours of Cap and Iron Man and then put all the other characters in the background, but they took some time to hang out with Rocket Raccoon, mm-hmm. and they took some time to hang out with Nebula. A lot of time hanging out with Nebula, as a matter of fact. Renner and ScarJo had that moment at the cliff.
Yep.
And they all worked. So, it's really difficult to make a movie with 10 to 12 leads. But that's what this was. It was a movie with 10 to 12 leads. Of course it's going to be a bit messy.
I know. And that's okay. Again, what really worked for me were those like smaller scenes.
Yeah.
A lot of the time. And even though like there are some characters that don't necessarily get as much screen time as, say, Iron Man, for example, it's nice to see that each character does have some moment to shine.
Yes.
Big or small. There's a few where it's like, I would have liked a little bit more of this one. I could have used a little more Gamora. I just like Gamora a lot.
Okay.
I could have maybe used, honestly, from someone who didn't see Captain Marvel, we'll get into this.
Let's do it right now.
You want to get into this right now?
Yeah, let's talk about the plot of this movie, shall we? Let's get into it. So the movie opens. The events of Infinity War just went down.
Yep.
Captain Marvel gets the signal from Nick Fury. She comes back from whatever planet she's been hanging out on for the last 20 years. I'm sure the name was mentioned at some point. I don't remember what it was. Something with the Kree and the Skrulls. I don't know. Somewhere in the galaxy.
Who cares?
Comes back to Earth. We're going to go get Thanos. Within 15 minutes, we got Thanos.
Not even. It's really, really, really fast.
And I appreciated this a lot. He's just sort of like a sad man. Here's another thing I liked about this movie, too. The first movie, Infinity War, was clearly Thanos' story. Mm-hmm. And this movie was the Avengers story. And I liked how, after Thanos had accomplished his mission, he's just a sad old man in the middle of a garden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't feel the need to linger on his character anymore because his story had already been told in the previous movie.
Exactly.
Right. So I appreciated the fact that, yeah, Thor just chopped his head off within 15 minutes and Captain Marvel says, we're going to get him. And they got him.
Didn't do what they wanted to do, though.
No. Well,
it still kind of failed.
Yes. Well, the stones were destroyed. And so Captain Marvel's job here is done. And she leaves. And that's it.
And we pretty much don't see her again.
Yeah. Now, I will say this. As someone who did not care for Captain Marvel and thinks that that character just doesn't work with the rest of these guys, I appreciated the fact there wasn't that much Captain Marvel. But on like a sort of logistical point of view,
mm-hmm.
when you end Infinity War with a teaser for Captain Marvel and then set an entire movie in between the release of the two Avengers movies about Captain Marvel, you sort of expect that she's going to be the key that unlocks this movie.
And she has what to do?
Like 10 minutes of fighting? That's it, right?
Yeah.
You described her as a deus ex machina, and that's basically what she is.
That is what she is.
Now, did you want her to play more of a pivotal part? I mean, I don't know.
Sure.
Why?
I don't know. Again, it's like, I haven't seen this character before. It's like, well, give her a moment to shine. Don't make her, you know, kind of make me roll my eyes at the end.
But here's the thing. We're going to see more of her.
Mm.
Like, we have a chance to see more of her. We're not going to get any more time with Tony and Cap.
Why couldn't we do that afterwards, though? Why did we need the movie in between? What did we need her for in this movie?
No, we didn't.
They could have.
Yeah, but we didn't need Black Panther or Spider-Man in this movie either.
Yeah, I guess not.
Right? But they're just sort of in there for the big fight sequence. But the torch is being passed now, right?
It's different, though, in something like Civil War, where it's like Black Panther comes on the screen and he makes an impression. Like, holy shit, who's this guy?
Yes.
And I would say the same about Spider-Man even more so. So there's a greater sense of the character in this one. And then I see Endgame. I'm like, who are you? What
yeah.
is this?
No, I'm with you.
What's your purpose? Why aren't you doing anything in this movie?
Listen, I think she sucks. I really do. I think Captain Marvel sucks.
Okay.
I don't think she's very good in the part. I think there's a real problem with her superpowers. They're going to have a hard time writing around how powerful she is because there's not really an enemy that she can't match. You know, like she is infused with like some nuclear reactor or something.
She's like indestructible.
Yeah, she has like, I don't know. I forget what. I don't even know what happened. I saw this movie a month ago. I don't remember what the plot was. Some Infinity Stone type thing. Some like magical goo became like infused in her bloodstream or something.
Okay.
And so now she's basically a nuclear warhead. Like she can just like fly around and as you see, like fly through things. And she's a bomb. That's what she is. She's a bomb. And okay. So she can turn on the bomb powers whenever she wants.
Okay.
So she's basically like a nuke. So like, what do you do about a nuke?
I don't know.
It's interesting to fight a nuke, but it's not interesting for the hero to have a nuke.
That's true.
You know?
Godzilla could kick the shit out of her.
Maybe. So I'm not so sure.
Yeah, no, Godzilla's the same thing, except it makes sense with Godzilla because he's a giant fucking monster.
Okay, sure, but there are other giant fucking monsters to fight Godzilla.
Which, yes.
There's no other Captain Marvel.
No.
So that's a problem, man. Especially after this first three phases where it's, for the most part, grounded superheroes.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
Well,
but
Iron Man and Cap are.
Relative to her.
Sure. No, my point is, I'm not so sure I like where this franchise is going. And I guess we'll talk about that in a minute.
Like, they become more cartoonish, I suppose, in that way. Is that what you're saying?
Sure, with cartoonish, but also hard to defeat.
Yeah.
Dude, Doctor Strange is teleporting entire countries to other regions of the globe.
That's kind of cool.
I know, but like, what the hell is Spider-Man with his web supposed to do?
It's the same thing that people were talking about when Suicide Squad came out. And you have people who are like, we want to band together a bunch of idiots who can stop the next Superman if he comes to Earth and tries to kill us all. And they get together a stripper with a bat.
Right.
It's like, well, wow.
Right.
Good on you guys. Great, great idea. I wouldn't have
thought
of that.
No, you're right. I don't know why Spider-Man's in this. I love Spider-Man. I love him on his solo adventures.
Mm-hmm.
But when you put them together, like, they're not... I mean, what the hell's Hawkeye supposed to do?
I don't know.
You know?
Like, Spider-Man can do some things. What the fuck can Hawkeye do?
You know me, Adam. I love Hawkeye. I love him. I don't know why he's in these anymore. He is completely irrelevant at this point.
Yeah. And even so, to me, I mean, he's got some great scenes in this, but as far as, like, his... the overall consequence to the bigger story, it doesn't serve much of a purpose.
No, you're right.
When you really break it down, there's only a few characters that really matter, mm-hmm. which is the maybe the bigger fundamental flaw of the film. Like, if you actually stop and look back at it all and really think about what's going on, you have Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, maybe the Hulk.
Yeah.
That's kind of it.
Yeah. You're right. And this new string of heroes, I'm not so sure I'm as invested in them as I am in Tony Stark.
I'm invested in Spider-Man.
And that's it, right?
Yes.
End list.
But Spider-Man's...
I'm sorry, man. I don't care for Doctor Strange either.
No, that's fine. You don't have to.
Man, I really don't dig Benedict Cumberbatch in that role. I find his origin to be, frankly, boring.
Okay.
And I don't think his powers are that interesting. Just like to... I mean, they're cool looking. Those shields look awesome. I don't know, man. I'm not as invested in that as I am in the story of Tony Stark.
No.
And that's a problem going forward. Yeah. Same with Captain Marvel. Black Panther, similarly. Like, I just don't love Chadwick Boseman in that role. Yeah. I loved Michael B. Jordan as Killmonger. I like that world. Not so sure I'm into the hero.
Which
so,
is a problem.
Yeah. However we're going to do these, I don't know if they're going to do any more Avengers movies. I would assume they are, or they maybe call them a different name.
They got to stop.
They're going to keep doing team-up movies.
No, I know that, but Avengers movies, God, I don't know.
Yeah, probably not. I don't know, the Toxic Avengers now.
The Toxic Avengers? Oh, Jesus Christ.
Other name, the Super Friends, whatever.
The Toxic Avengers? You mean that one by that guy who made Poultrygeist?
Yes.
Jesus Christ.
Call it something else.
Could you imagine if they gave that man $100 million?
Dude, it's like, well.
I want to see them give Neil Breen $100 million.
I do, too. I'm not so sure Neil Breen doesn't have $100 million. Let's be very clear on that.
Neil Breen secretly directed Endgame.
Yo. That explains it. That explains it. All right. But we'll talk about the future in a second. Let's get to this, though. Soon the plot becomes we're going to travel back in time to several of the previous Marvel movies in order to get the Infinity Stones into our timeline mm-hmm. and then snap our fingers and bring back our friends.
Yes.
So, it didn't work for you. Why didn't it work for you?
Like, well, when they're doing the time travel stuff to begin with, like building the machines, I could not have been less interested.
Okay.
I will say that if anything was boring in the film, it was that.
They did yada yada those details.
To the point where I'm just like, no, I'm sorry, but you got to really like go into depth for this shit for me to really buy into it.
Yeah, Tony was just sort of talking to Alexa and just...
I'm like, oh, a Mobius... What does a Mobius strip have to do with anything? It's a one-sided object. Cool.
Right. Just started moving his hands a bit, and that was it. All right. Figured out time travel, Pepper.
I'm like, what? What?
They did yada yada. I wasn't that interested, to be honest with you.
It's like, I don't mind a time travel plot, but like, you gotta, for me, you gotta like simplify it, or it's hard to explain, because I've seen time travel plots that get way too complicated and I lose interest immediately, and then they're like oversimplified and I'm just like, no, stop, that was stupid. And this one doesn't do either.
I have a question for you. What's your favorite time travel movie? Or I should say a movie that best articulates what's happening with the time travel.
Best articulates it?
Yes. Like, it is the most coherent. The logic makes sense to you. You understand what's happening, and you didn't feel like there were that many plot holes where it distracted from the movie.
Maybe Back to the Future.
Really?
Maybe.
That's a weird answer. That's a bizarre answer.
Yeah.
Maybe. Wow. That's a really bizarre answer, because I don't think of Back to the Future as a movie that's that, like...
It doesn't make any sense.
In tune with the science.
The problem is that time travel doesn't make any sense.
See, this is what I'm getting at, though. It seems like you have a bias against time travel movies.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I guess. So, but you gotta, like, have some fun with it. Like, to me, this didn't really have fun with it.
See, I'm not with you.
And it didn't necessarily... take it terribly seriously at the same time. It rode a weird gray area, and I was sort of left confused by it. And I was just not having fun with any of it. Yeah.
See, I feel differently. I love that they called it a time heist.
Mm-hmm. I like that idea.
Yeah. I really didn't mind that they went back to the other movies.
I don't mind that either.
I was actually expecting to hate it. Like, oh God, we're really just doing the nostalgia thing.
I agree.
It felt very fan servicey to literally replay the scenes from the previous movies.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they did it pretty cleverly, and I thought it was a kind of interesting construct.
Oh yeah,
to base your movie on.
Oh, they even subvert your expectations in a way with like Captain America in the elevator, which is really great.
That was awesome
because that was referencing Winter Soldier, I think.
Yeah, that was from Winter Soldier, the elevator fight scene.
Mm-hmm.
I also liked, especially in that Avengers timeline. So they go back to three movies, right? They go back to the original Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
They go back to Thor: The Dark World, which is a movie that you did not see.
Nope.
And I must admit, I did not remember much of. Interesting choice to revisit that one.
Mm-hmm.
And they went back to Guardians of the Galaxy, the original. Interesting choices. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, I guess, they go back to the original Captain America movie, and they hang out in that world for one more time.
Kind of. Yeah, no.
Kind of. Yeah. They were in the lab where the original Stark... What's Tony's father's name?
Howard.
Howard Stark. Yeah, Howard Stark's hanging out, and that was where they got the idea for Captain America.
Well, no, it was way after Captain America.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was 1970.
Got it.
Yeah, and for some reason, Cap's girlfriend at the time still keeps a picture of him on her desk, which I'm sorry, but like, what?
And hasn't aged a day.
No. Like, that's, what is that? It's 1945, so you're going on, what, 25 years later? And, you're still holding on to this scrawny-ass dude?
Well, this is a really interesting point, now that you mention it. Agent Carter, that's 25 years after. Because that's right, because the dude from Mad Men doesn't play Howard Stark in the original Cap movie, right?
No.
But he does play Howard Stark in Iron Man 2.
Yes.
Right, so he aged a bunch, and Agent Carter still flawless.
Yes. They forgot a little bit. They forgot a few details. And maybe that's
didn't even think about that.
Yes.
All right. I didn't realize that. Yeah.
It's okay.
It's okay.
But
a plot hole.
I will say, like, Cap, get over it, dude. I'm sorry. I understand, like, maybe she was your first love, but I mean, Jesus, you've been frozen in ice for fuck knows how long. You've been teaming up with these guys. You don't have feelings for anybody else. This girl has just been on your mind. Like, dude, it's fine.
Has Cap gotten laid since the original timeline?
I don't think he's ever gotten laid.
Captain America has never had sex?
No, I don't think he's had sex until the very end of Endgame. That's what we all want, really. We all want Captain America to have sex, so...
Wait a minute, is this part of the comics?
What?
That Cap is a virgin?
Well, think about it. He didn't have sex with her at any point the first Avenger. We know
him,
that.
Him and Natasha never, like, shared a...
No.
Intimate night
He would
together?
Never do that with Natasha.
They never got tipsy just one
no.
night?
It's like, I think Natasha would be the one to tell him to fuck off.
Dude, there's a lot of sexual tension boiling between those two. You're sure they never fucked?
I am positive. I'm 110%.
5 years, all my friends died? You're telling me in that window, not just they didn't bang once?
No, man.
Dude, I don't buy it.
Natasha's not into Cap. She's just not.
She's into big green men.
That's true. I mean, who isn't? But
that's interesting. I didn't know Captain. Oh man, I feel bad for Captain America. Yeah.
So that kiss at the very end, it's like, yes, he's gonna fuck now.
Okay.
And it's gonna be great.
Finally. Time to take it to fuck town.
Avengers, he's gonna fuck now.
Just some Barry White music playing in the background.
Love the end credits music, by the way.
Okay, I didn't stick around for the end credits, so we'll talk about that in a bit, I guess. I was going to say about the time travel aspect. Yep. I did like how, for example, in the Avengers movie, they showed you not the end of the Loki battle, but what happened after the Loki battle.
Yeah.
I really dug the cleanup crew came in from S.H.I.E.L.D. and they took Loki's scepter and they put it in a nice crate. And
it was so funny because it literally felt like someone was yelling, okay, cut.
But yeah,
people.
It did. It felt in between takes. That's exactly right.
I love that.
Yeah, everybody stopped talking. It was just like nice and chill now. Everybody let the guard down. And I really appreciated how they showed you the other angle of it. The Guardians timeline listen, that had to happen for the sake of the plot because you got to get Thanos back into the story somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I could give or take all that stuff, but I really dug the Captain America thing. And it's interesting. I am not usually a sucker for the daddy issue plots in these movies. And I normally roll my eyes, you know, every time a character feels a lot of angst about his father's death. We've been there, done that before. It really worked for me in these.
Mm-hmm.
And Thor getting the last minute with his mom and Tony getting the last moment with his dad.
Oh, I loved that moment with Tony and his dad.
God, that really got to me, man, in a way that I wasn't expecting it.
Because again, it's like a weird arc for his character that we haven't explored yet, because that's been a constant thing throughout the entire series of his like kind of sort of disdain for his dad for how he was brought up. And to see it kind of come to a close like that was like, oh, wow. Like, because you kind of forget about it as the series is going along. But for it to wrap up that way, it's like, oh, shit, yeah. This is a part of Tony's humanity that, you know, really needed to be tied up properly. So I was actually very satisfied to see it done that way.
Yeah, it was really clever. And it didn't feel like, as much as I love this movie, Back to the Future 2, which just recycled the original plot to get people into the movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they actually went back and dealt with those unresolved issues in an emotional way and in a really thoughtful way. And I appreciated that a lot, even if it was a little hokey and a little fan servicey.
Well, it doesn't even serve the plot. It's just for the characters.
Yes.
Which is great. I and this is going to bother some people like Nick, who need it to be like plot, 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 plot. But I'm like, if you can take time to really devote the story just to the characters, just for a moment, it'll make it all the more worthwhile for me.
Yeah.
And it really works. I'm happy that those moments are sprinkled throughout.
Now, that being said, you had some problems with the logic of the time travel.
I guess I can kind of buy into the idea that there are other timelines.
So you were asking me about this yesterday. I
don't
explained
get that.
This to you off air.
You did. And like, I understand it now. But at the same time, I'm like, well, why does time work that way?
Well, because they made it up. Because it's a made-up world with magical wizards. I mean, I don't know. That's what's happening.
It's just very like, okay, yeah, this is what's happening. It's like, oh, wow, okay.
So I understood this. Now, listen, my interpretation could be wrong, but I'm basing this on what Tilda Swinton said when she met up with Ruffalo. So time is a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
And it remains on that one timeline if you never go back and change anything. But the second that the Avengers went back to those three movies, the future then became their past, which means everything that you create from here on out will change your future. It's not like you're going in a circle. It's not like Back to the Future where you're going to run into a million copies of yourself, or if I kill one butterfly, the human race is extinct in the future. That's not how it works. When you go back in time, you are creating an additional off-ramp, an additional timeline in addition to the timeline that you just left.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was what happened when Tilda Swinton took away one of the Infinity Stones on that very conveniently drawn-out line diagram. It splintered off into its own timeline. So, for example, the Gamora that leaves the 2014 timeline is moved into the 2019 timeline, and she's a different person. So everything that they did in the Avengers movie, in the Guardians movie, and in Thor the Dark World affect that timeline in a different way than the current timeline. Am I sounding like a lunatic? I feel like I'm a fanboy right now. I feel like I'm comic book guy.
A little bit.
But that's my interpretation of it. I could be wrong.
No, I think I kind of got it.
So they went back in time, got the Infinity Stones, brought them into their universe where those Infinity Stones don't exist, used them, and then brought them back.
Yes.
So theoretically, those timelines can go on undisturbed, separate and apart from the timeline that they currently exist in. The one where they killed Thanos. In other words, they always chopped Thanos' head off. Just because Thanos traveled back from 2014 doesn't mean that his head was not chopped off in the 2019 timeline.
Okay. I'm just thinking now, because if you take the Infinity Stones from one timeline and you go and grab them, you get your own timelines from the ones that you took them from, right? But then you go back and then you set up a whole like new set of three timelines, I would imagine, right?
This is fair.
And then
you theoretically could do this an infinite amount of times.
Yes. And then we would argue like, okay, with the Infinity Stones, we were talking about this. I was a little confused. Why would these Infinity Stones bring the people back?
So, well, any of the... You just need the Infinity Stones in the Gauntlet. So
okay.
It, death does not operate the same way when it's at the hand of the Infinity Gauntlet.
Mm-hmm.
So what Thanos did there when he snapped his fingers, he didn't kill the population. He just made them disappear. Right?
Yeah.
When they evaporate into dust, that's a different death than the death that Tony Stark experiences at the end, or the death that Natasha experiences on the cliff. Those are different deaths. Or, for example, what Loki experiences at the beginning of Infinity War.
Okay.
All right? Different deaths.
Yes.
When he snaps his fingers, they're gone. If you can make something disappear with the Infinity Gauntlet, you can bring it back. You can't necessarily bring somebody back that died because he snapped his fingers with the Infinity Gauntlet. So this was something that I was having a hard time racking my brain around.
Why don't you go and you do exactly what they did with Thanos in cutting his arm off, cutting his head off, but before he destroys the stones?
What do you mean?
Well, isn't that the point? You're just trying to get all the Infinity Stones from that universe, right?
Right.
So if you want to be like really efficient about it, you're like, oh, well, we just performed this awesome-ass plan where we went to Thanos, wherever he was. We chopped his arm off, and we cut his head off. So just do that moments before he destroys the stones.
No, but see, no.
Why can't they do that?
You're thinking of it wrong. Because now, again, you're creating a new timeline.
Well, you're always creating a new timeline.
I know, but the events of your past, they always happened that way. So if you travel back...
You're saying if they did that,
the future becomes your past. That's what the Hulk said.
Okay.
When you travel back in time, the future becomes your past. There's no changing that.
Okay.
All you're doing is creating a new timeline when you travel back.
Sure. Okay.
You understand?
Yeah.
So you can't. It's not as simple as go back in time, kill things, because they went through this whole speech.
Not really. It wasn't. I wouldn't call it a speech.
No, Ruffalo.
But they
Ruffalo kinda... explained this because there was. They even explicitly said at some point in the movie, time travel doesn't work the way that it did in Back to the Future.
I know that.
That is a lie. They say that it doesn't work like that.
Yes.
When you travel to the past, the future becomes your past.
I'm like, okay.
So you can't just kill Thanos like you would baby Hitler.
I don't know why you can't. I'm still in trouble wrapping my head around like why they chose to go with that rule. Like, I get it, but like again,
for plot's sake, that's all.
It's like, what? Like,
for plot's sake.
Like, and you could have ended this movie earlier if you go by like normal movie rules. Damn it, I get it. It's fine. I mean,
that's just the movie they wanted to make, Adam. So they looked for a reason to make that movie.
You can't do some crazy shit with these Infinity Stones anyway. Like,
I guess theoretically, what you could do too. Remember when Thanos had the time stone?
Yeah.
And he just like twisted back the clock? Couldn't you just do that with Tony? No, but then you would never have snapped. He would have never snapped his fingers. You know what I'm saying?
I guess.
That's the one thing I was trying to get over in my head was, if you can bring back all of these people, why can't you bring back Tony? I guess theoretically someone would have always had to snap their fingers.
I guess.
And
so.
That's going to kill whoever does it. Except for the Hulk, I guess.
Again, that was my other issue. Why the hell didn't the Hulk just do it?
Yeah, I guess he could have.
Like, dude, I don't care. I don't give a shit. Sacrifice your arms and they will make you robotic arms.
Right.
This is a fucking superhero film.
Fuck yeah, I guess.
So the Hulk is the worst character. He let Tony die.
Yeah. So I'm deciding to treat it like the deaths at the hand of the Gauntlet can be undone with the Gauntlet, but normal run-of-the-mill deaths cannot be undone.
Okay.
Right?
All right.
Unless they're Vision, in which case, when they die in Infinity War, you can just bring them back 30 seconds.
Damn. Interesting rules, but...
Yes, there are plot holes. I understand there are plot holes.
Yes.
I'm not a big plot hole guy. You know me.
No, and I'm not really a big plot hole guy either, unless it's Interstellar. But...
Okay.
For the most part, yeah, with a movie like this that's just asking you to go in and have fun, I'm like, okay, fine, cool. I'll do it.
I had fun.
I had fun, too.
I had fun with it. So they get all the stones. Thanos finds his way back into the current timeline. along with Gamora. Oh, no, wait a minute. We missed a detail. We got to talk about Natasha and Renner.
Oh, okay.
Let's talk about this scene.
Red
Skull back.
Yeah, well, yeah. They repeated the same thing.
They did.
It was the same exact scene, which was a little annoying. This scene did not really work for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know why. I didn't really care.
So I disagree with you.
What do you mean you disagree with? How can you disagree with me? Now that makes no sense.
Fine.
How can you?
I had a different opinion.
There
you
go.
Is that better?
I disagree that I'm not feeling this way about this scene.
I felt differently than you.
Okay.
I thought the scene was incredibly choreographed and incredibly made. And
it's well done.
Also really well acted. I thought both of them did it. Hang on a second. Dude, can we just do this for a second?
What?
I fucking love Renner in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I really like him in this movie, and I'm not joking.
Oh, you actually really?
I actually liked him.
Good.
I really liked him a lot.
I liked him, too.
I love Renner. You know what I realized about Renner? He's an actor, and people should let him act.
Yes.
Is that hard?
I've always liked Renner.
Good.
Yeah.
Is it that hard to let Jeremy Renner act?
He's a great guy. He's the kind of guy that I want to hang with, and I love his acting, and he's awesome in, I don't know, what's he awesome in? He's awesome as Jeffrey Dahmer?
Never seen that movie.
Neither have I.
Great in Hustle, great in American Hustle, that is. Great in the Ben Affleck, The Town.
Yes.
Awesome in The Town. And, like, has his moments in these movies. I actually really like him in Age of Ultron, even though you haven't seen that movie.
Do you like him in The Hurt Locker?
Yes, I do like him in The Hurt Locker.
Because I like him in The Hurt Locker, too.
Yeah, I do. He's an interesting performer in that way. And I don't think, like, he's meant to be a movie star. And what's sort of interesting about him in these movies is they go out of their way to make him not a movie star.
No, well, he does not strike me as a movie star, ever.
No, I don't think he is.
There's something about him that just, maybe it's his face. He's got an interesting face.
Yes.
That is not movie star, but it's just... I don't know.
Maybe he's kind of like John Cazale-esque. Like, he would never work in a leading role, but he's awesome in the margins.
I agree.
And I loved him in this because he had a lot of emotional weight, man.
Yeah.
Renner's out there in Japan just killing dudes.
Which is awesome, by the way.
Which is great. And he got this weird haircut.
I know.
Into that. He was missing that Linda Cardellini. I was with him the entire way, and I loved him in that scene, and I love ScarJo in that scene. Were you surprised by how that played out?
No.
No. Why not?
I don't know. I just wasn't. I was like, well, I knew that somebody's going to have to die, and something about it to me screamed that it would be ScarJo in this case. I don't know why. Huh. I was like, I don't know why. I'm just feeling Scarlett Johansson here. I'm feeling that this is it.
So I didn't feel that way because I know that there's a Black Widow movie coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And they've, like, cast it already. Yeah. And there's a director attached. And I think it's going to come out next year. So I guess that movie's going to be a prequel now. But I was just expecting that for the sake of IP, we get rid of Renner here. However, he's doing a TV show too now. Yeah. So I guess,
There's something about the nature of films now that try to subvert your expectations where they like subvert the subversion, and I'm like, there's just, I don't know why, maybe it was because of The Last Jedi, but something is telling me ScarJo here.
Yeah. So okay, maybe you weren't surprised. I was very surprised at how it played out, and I thought again the emotional stakes there were so palpable. The fact that both of these people were literally fighting to do the heroic thing, there's something just beautiful about that idea, and it felt like a real emotional payoff for both of these actors, and it was just balletic. I really liked how they kept throwing themselves off, and you know, Renner trips ScarJo, and then ScarJo shoots Renner, and then Renner starts falling, and then ScarJo catches him and harnesses him in, and I loved it, man. I just thought the scene worked, and I felt really bad when Black Widow died, even though when I think back on these movies, we haven't really spent a ton of time with her.
Mm-hmm. Which is my only concern.
I was upset. I was emotional. For maybe it's another version of Stockholm Syndrome, as I said earlier.
Yep.
I felt it. I liked that scene a lot.
I like everything leading up to the death, but the death itself, I just remember being like, eh.
Whatever.
Eh, yeah, whatever.
And what is dead will never die, because they always come back in some iteration, right?
I'm not the best you know, average here. I'm not the best subject to take because I have no soul.
Yeah,
and my heart died long ago, so it's okay. People here, listen to Nico.
Okay. So then we get to this third act. All the stones have been returned, with minimal damage, I guess. Loki got away.
Minimal
with the,
damage
with the Tesseract.
Oh well, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I have a feeling that's going to come back into play too.
Yeah, it probably will.
I think.
Maybe they fucked up royally.
Something's telling me Tom Hiddleston is not done in this universe.
Yeah. That timeline, I don't know. What do you think? What's the worst thing that they could make out of a timeline?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Maybe that timeline is what's going to be on the Loki TV show.
Hmm.
Maybe that's what's going to happen.
I want a timeline where there's a villain played by John Waters.
Ooh. By the way, a lot of cameos in this movie.
Mm.
Yvette Nicole Brown was in it.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Ken was in it.
Yep.
Joe or Anthony Russo was in the beginning.
Who is that? I want to say it's Joe, but I'm not sure.
All right.
He looks like a Joe.
And in that Avengers timeline, when you'll have no idea who this person is, in the Loki sequence, when Loki gets away, because they're in the lobby and they're squabbling over who gets control of the Tesseract,
mm-hmm.
one of the agents on the S.H.I.E.L.D. side is Matthew Berry of ESPN. He's the fantasy football expert on ESPN. And I saw that guy and I'm like, what are you doing in a major motion picture?
Okay, maybe he
like,
was just
whose
there.
Dick did you suck to get here?
Maybe he was just standing there. He didn't even know there was a movie being shot.
He had a speaking line.
Yeah, so what?
I'm like, dude, why is... I burst out laughing. I turned to my buddy. I'm like, is that Matthew Berry? It's a funny story. I'm not going to spill too many details, but I have a friend that works for ESPN, and Matthew Berry was not too kind to him one time. So really? I always make fun of Matthew Berry.
Oh. Now I'm curious.
That's all I will say.
Okay.
But he's in that movie.
All right.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Fuck Matthew Berry.
Yeah, fuck Matthew Berry is right.
Sweet, okay.
I lost my fantasy football league because of him.
What a dick.
His terrible advice. His awful columns. The worst fantasy football projections on the planet are from Matthew Berry on ESPN. Wow. Anyway, he's in that movie. Let's get to the last act then, shall we?
Yeah.
So here we are. The final fight. The Avengers have been brought back.
Mm-hmm.
All of them this time. Spider-Man, Falcon, Black Panther, Doctor Strange.
Mostly for cameos.
Yeah, basically for cameos.
Yeah.
Captain Marvel's there too. Whole Avengers headquarters explodes!
Yes.
None of the characters die in that explosion.
I saw that explosion. I'm like, well, that's the biggest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
That's the worst explosion any man has ever... Oh, they're still alive. Okay, whatever.
A bit of a stretch.
Yes.
Bit of a stretch. A
little bit.
But they're all back. They got to fight Thanos one more time. And what'd you think of this fight?
It's like a Jackson Pollock painting of superheroes.
Ooh.
That's a good way to describe it.
I like that.
Yes. It is the most batshit insane, over-the-top thing I've ever seen, I think.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, it's a CGI clusterfuck.
Yeah.
But it has its moments.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah.
It did.
It definitely has its moments.
I wouldn't call it one of the most visually stunning fights in this franchise.
No, neither would I.
I don't think it's on par with anything in Winter Soldier, anything in the Guardians movies. Probably not even better than that fight scene on that random planet in Infinity War.
Yeah,
I think
agree.
I like that one a little bit better.
That one is just nerve-wracking, though. But that's also because there's not as many characters.
Right.
Not even close.
Yeah.
This thing is, there's not a level of practicality to it that you get in like the Helm's Deep battle in Lord of the Rings, which is why that works so well for me. And this, I'm like, there's a bit of a disconnect because I just know that it's all, I don't know.
It's all on a green screen.
The fakeness is a little more obvious.
Sure.
But you get awesome moments like right before, right when Cap gets his broken shield back. This is before like the really big shit happens. But I love that moment when Thanos is kicking the shit out of him and he gets the hammer.
Yeah.
That's a really surprising moment.
So I turned to my buddy when that happened and I was like, because everybody in the theater, did they applaud in your theater when that happened? Yeah, mm-hmm. They did in mine. And I turned to my buddy and I'm like, what is that supposed to mean? Is that a big deal? And apparently like that proves that Cap is worthy of something. Like he's worthy of the power of the hammer.
Yes.
Apparently that like means something to comic book heads.
Well, I mean, I don't know. All I know is that there's a scene in Age of Ultron where they're trying to lift the hammer, and Cap is the only one to kind of nudge it a little bit.
Right. So they've been waiting for this for a while, I guess.
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was a little weird, too.
Yeah, I mean, it was a cool moment. I just didn't, like, I guess, have the emotional context that a lot of these fans did.
I didn't totally get it.
Yeah. No, I was more confused than anything. I thought it was cool. It was a cool visual, but, like, it didn't mean as much to me as it did to some people watching.
Yeah, I thought it was a little surprising. But it was fun to see him hit people with a hammer.
Yeah, that was awesome. It was cool. And, yeah, there were a lot of great moments. I especially loved the moment before all of the new Avengers, I'll call them, came into the fold. And Cap is sort of standing by himself in front of Thanos and all of his goons. Just this one man ready to face the world.
Yeah.
I gotta be honest. So I cried like 3 times in this movie. That was one of the 3 times. Like, I got emotional when ScarJo died. I got emotional when Tony died. And that moment where Cap, again, one man versus an army, ready to continue battle. And then the Avengers all come together and he says, "Avengers assemble," goosebumps and tears down the face.
Okay. Yeah, that's happened. A great cinematic moment.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's what I want, man. That's heroicism. That's why I go see superhero movies. They don't always work for me, but those are the reasons why.
No, I would say for the most part, it's a successful conclusion in that way.
Yeah.
I don't really. No. And it, like I said, it's got its flaws. But for the most part, where it needs to work, it really works, especially in a moment like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That moment was great. And then Doctor Strange giving Tony
the one. I was like, okay, that's good shit.
The number one. I'm like, yes!
I was like, okay, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, this is movies, man! And it paid off all the groundwork that they laid. Obviously, the 1 in 14 million thing, I always found kind of stupid. But when it ends up paying off, is this the one timeline where we win? And he gives them that signal right before it happens. I'm like, wow, okay.
But it's almost like you have to take that shit. You have to go and take the stones in order for this to work out.
Yes.
It's almost as if he's saying, like, yeah, Tony, I'm sorry, but this is the one, and you have to kind of
this
go
is our
it.
Only chance.
Yeah, and he's like, all right.
Right. And he does it. Yeah. And it's an incredible arc, and it was incredibly satisfying. And, man, I'm upset we're not going to get any more Robert Downey Jr. in an Iron Man suit ever again.
I know. It was really sad, especially watching Iron Man the previous night, because in preparation for this, I just watched the first Iron Man, and there's an opening in that movie where Obadiah Stane is like, well, the best thing about Tony is always the worst thing, in that he's always working.
Yeah.
And then this movie ends with them saying, okay, you can rest now, Tony.
You can rest now. We'll be okay. Then also the stuff with Peter.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Man, God, that relationship works.
I was like, okay, if you see Peter for the first time, you give him a goddamn hug. And he gave him a hug. I loved it.
You know, that relationship is really a miracle. And I'm upset that we didn't get more of it. We only really got 3 movies with Cap and, I'm sorry, not with Cap, with Iron Man and with Spider-Man together.
Yeah, I agree. It was really great. And I'm going to miss it.
I'm going to miss it so much. Yeah. That moment was so touching. And yeah. It's a great arc. I will say that, and this is another hot take. Are you ready for this? Prepare yourself emotionally. I think Robert Downey Jr. should be nominated for an Oscar for this
movie.
Ooh,
for this movie?
I'm going to start the campaign right now.
Okay.
I'm going to start it right now. I don't know what you nominate him in, lead actor or supporting, I guess supporting actor because it's an ensemble.
He's really good.
I'd nominate him.
He's really good.
No. I don't often call for that with blockbusters, but he was magnanimous in this movie. He was really, this is his best outing as Tony, I think, in the entire franchise.
It's like every facet of Tony too that he could possibly offer, and obviously he knows that this is his last outing, so he's going to give it his all. And it was, oh my God, so flavorful but so sad at the end too. And yeah, I really love him this. You know, I'll get on your side for that. Why not?
When he meets up with Cap at the beginning and he says, "I needed you, and you weren't there, and look what happened now." Like, he goes to some dark places in those scenes.
I know.
And again, like, the interesting choice of having Pepper live and having his life work out, has a daughter, has everything he ever wanted in the face of all of this terror, and then he is faced with the decision to give it up. A lot of turmoil going on underneath the surface, and I felt it every step of the way. He is absolutely great in this movie. He is capital G great. And I would just, not only for this movie, I would award him for 11 years of this franchise. Because he has been consistently the best thing in all of these movies.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he deserves it at this point, is what you're saying. It's almost like an honorary Oscar, but hey.
Yeah, but not to sell short this performance, because he was great in this.
No, this is like his baby, essentially. Yeah.
No, I want them to do what they did for Stallone in Creed. That's what I want.
Well, they'll, what, nominate him but not give him the fucking award?
Well, they should have given him the award, too, but that's neither here nor there.
Is that the worst snub ever?
Might be. I guess there are worse snubs, but that's the one I was most pissed off about.
I may be more pissed off at that one than Saving Private Ryan and Shakespeare in Love.
Listen, if I was around for Ordinary People over Raging Bull or Dances with Wolves over Goodfellas, I would have been pretty pissed.
Yeah. This is pretty bad, though.
It was really bad. How do you rob America of that moment?
I don't know.
You give it to the fucking British dude from Bridge of Spies.
Well, you made the best point. It's like, you realize that we don't have a Stallone acceptance speech now. It's like, oh.
Well, he won in...
For the Golden Globe.
No, he won in 77 for something, right?
No.
Rocky won Best Picture that year.
Yeah, but he's never won an Oscar himself.
I got to look up the archives. He didn't give a speech when Rocky won Best Picture?
I don't think he did.
And he didn't win Best Actor or Best Screenplay?
No.
Well, that's a shame. Who won Best Actor that year?
What was the year? 76?
76? I guess 76, yeah.
Good question.
Let me look this up real quick.
Now we're going on a little tangent.
I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, Peter Finch won Best Actor for Network.
Okay.
And, yeah, he didn't win Best Screenplay. All right, I got to look up that year, maybe. Okay, yeah, I'm with you. A couple more questions, I guess, that I have for you before we get out of here. Mm-hmm. Did you like this iteration of the Hulk?
No.
Wow. Cool.
I mean, I don't know. It was just there for comic relief, essentially. I mean, he's not bad, but I remember thinking, like, there's a sense of me that just wants the Hulk to be the Hulk.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but I was having a lot of time taking him seriously whenever he was on screen. It's Mark Ruffalo, a big green CGI Mark Ruffalo talking like Mark Ruffalo, and I couldn't break the two.
I've always felt like the Hulk himself is a better character than Bruce Banner.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he works in Ragnarok because he is the Hulk way more than he's Bruce Banner.
Yeah.
You know, and same thing with Avengers. He's not that... You don't see much of Ruffalo in either Avengers movie. So in that respect, yeah, I could have used less Ruffalo in the performance. We talked about it last week. I would love to live in the parallel dimension where Ed Norton continued to play the Hulk, but yeah. We don't live in that universe. I thought it was funny at times. I loved the scene at the diner in the beginning, but other than that, you're right. I kind of just wanted more of the Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that. How about Thor? How about Fat Thor?
I think it's going to go down either as, you know what? No, I feel like this is, do people like this?
I hope they do. Cause I did.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say it's going to be underrated or is it going to be underrated? I don't know.
I don't know.
I think for women, they'll hate it. I know Abby didn't like it.
Yeah.
But
no, there's a lot of women in my life that are quite fetched by Chris Hemsworth.
And then us dudes. You know what? They finally let us dudes win here. We can have a fat Chris Hemsworth.
We finally got a Big Lebowski reference in the Avengers franchise. I dug it, man. I know they literally modeled the performance off of Jeffrey Lebowski. He had like the sweater and he was always drunk and he's had the same sort of philosophy on life. Yeah, I thought, you know what I loved about it? They committed to the bit.
Yes, I know. They didn't stop at all. They kept it out throughout. Because I was expecting them to, at some point, for him to, like, somehow get back to his normal self.
Yeah.
But he was his same fat-ass self throughout the entire film.
No, they kept...
It was awesome.
Was that a fat suit or was that CGI?
Oh, no, it was a fat suit.
Okay. Yeah, I just thought the first moment they showed it, it was hilarious and it never stopped being funny.
Mm-hmm.
God bless Chris Hemsworth for figuring out that character after four movies.
I know.
They finally got there.
Jesus.
Because Thor sucked at the beginning of these movies.
Oh God! I mean, I don't remember the first movie.
Okay, yeah, it's bad, dude.
Flat out, do not remember.
And you didn't see Dark World, right? Not much better in Dark World. Yeah, they turned it into a charming comedic performance,
mm-hmm.
And it turns out like Chris Hemsworth is a way better comedic actor than he is a dramatic actor.
Oh yeah,
so he's awesome in this. And I am so pumped. I guess now we can transition to this for the future of this Guardians of the Galaxy franchise. Because it seems like that's where we're going. At the end of the movie, a couple things happen. Tony dies.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody gets together for a funeral. Cap goes on, gets married
to the girl.
To Peggy, not Peggy Olsen. Agent Carter. What is Agent Carter's name? Is she Peggy?
I think Peggy Carter. I think she
Peggy
is.
Peggy Carter? Okay.
There's a name that doesn't exist anymore.
Peggy.
Peggy.
Yeah. It's just Mad Men characters and old spies from World War II.
Fittingly.
Yeah. We get that's sort of the emotional crux of the movie. He is sent back in time to return the Infinity Stones to their original owners, but he decides, I'm not going to come back. Instead, I'm going to hang here in the old timeline with the love of my life and grow old together. And so again, the time travel logic, I don't try thinking about it too much. I thought emotionally the moment worked.
Yes.
He ends up coming back to Avenger HQ as an old man, sits by the lake, gives the shield over to the Falcon. He is the new Captain America. Bucky remains the Winter Soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And that concludes the story of Chris Evans as Captain America, I guess. What'd you think of that moment?
I thought it was really, really heartfelt and really nice.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you know, it's a perfect way to let this, like, so, you know, Boy Scout of a character go, I guess.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm surprised they didn't kill him, I'll be honest with you.
No, me too. Because, I mean, I think everyone thought he was going to die.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I think that's how it was supposed to happen.
Right.
I think the original Captain America in the comics, anyway, dies, and then Bucky is the one who becomes the next Captain America.
Well, from what I understand, in different iterations, it's been passed to both characters.
Okay.
I guess Anthony Mackie's character's name is Sam, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in some versions he's passed it to Sam, and some versions he's passed it to Bucky.
Okay.
So it could have gone either way. And I guess that was a debate among nerds of which one he was going to go.
Okay. But it was also a debate on whether or not he was going to die.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I think this character, you know, had earned that outing, too. It's like, yeah, it would have been kind of sad if they had never resolved that little thing with him and the girl, even though I think it's funny that he's still thinking about the girl.
Yeah.
But still.
That was clever.
Yes.
Too. Like, it was a good way to subvert expectations in a way that didn't involve death.
I know.
Because everybody had been talking about, oh, his contract is up. He says he's done after this movie, yada, yada, yada. So they found an interesting way to kind of kill him off without killing him off. And I dug that. And I also feel like it's kind of appropriate because Captain America doesn't really, like, he's not the type of character you want to see a death scene for.
No, yeah, he didn't deserve a death.
He's a mythic hero. He's not human like Tony Stark is in many ways.
I agree.
And so that felt appropriate. I did feel like they missed an opportunity to say the line, I had a date again.
Oh, yeah.
That was the one nitpick. Is rather than have that long conversation with Anthony Mackie,
that's true.
He should have been like, where'd you go? And Cap should have went, I had a date. That was that.
Well, that would have told you all. I mean, I knew it was going to be the girl, but it's like, yeah.
If I was writing it, that's how I would have wrote it.
I would have probably done that too.
Yeah.
I don't know if I thought about that, but that would have been much more appropriate.
Yeah.
Great old man makeup, by the way.
Awesome old man makeup.
I took particular note of that because old man makeup is a big problem in movies.
Yeah.
But I was like, you know what? This is the first time I can definitively say good old man makeup.
Yes.
It actually looks great.
Yep. So that happens, and we learn that Thor is now going to hang out with the Guardians.
Mm-hmm.
No more Thor movies, I guess, for a little while.
Yeah.
We're just going to chill in space with James Gunn and the crew.
That's fine.
You're not excited for that?
No, I'm excited for Guardians of the Galaxy, but we don't need more Thor films.
Yeah, but no, I think that's a cool way to do it.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to kill off Thor either. I still want to keep Thor around because they just figured out the character.
Yes.
So okay. I feel like tonally that's going to work out. And he's got like great chemistry with all those guys.
I love the idea that you make a movie like Thor Ragnarok, which is tonally more in the vein of Guardians of the Galaxy, and then all of a sudden they're like, why don't we just put them together? It's like,
great idea.
All right.
I dug the idea. I really like it. Okay. So I guess that's where that's going. And I guess Ant-Man is still around, and all these people are still around, and Black Panther's going to have more movies, and Spider-Man is coming later this year.
The only ones I'm really excited for would be Spider-Man and, Spider-Man and, I guess, Guardians of the Galaxy and Thor in that way.
Yeah.
So that's it. There will be plenty of Ant-Man films that I will not see. There will be plenty of Black Panther films that I will not see, you know?
Yeah.
And... will I see Captain America now? I don't know.
Well, I don't think they're doing any more. They're doing a TV show.
Okay.
That's what's coming. that's the interesting thing too. So they're gonna do Scarlet Witch and Vision, even though Vision is dead at the end of this movie. They're gonna do that as a miniseries.
Interesting.
We're gonna have Cap and Bucky, the new Cap and Bucky on a TV show. Mm-hmm. They're doing Hawkeye and they're doing Loki.
So we're just going to TV now?
On Disney Plus.
Okay.
Those are all miniseries, and then the movies are gonna be Doctor Strange and Guardians and perhaps some new heroes, I guess. Angelina Jolie is, I guess, doing a movie. I'm not sure.
She's directing a movie?
No, she's going to star in it. I guess it's her and Kumail Nanjiani. It's some franchise no one has heard of. I don't know.
Interesting.
That's in production for next year. Black Widow movie coming. I will say, I thought this was a great ending. I thought it pulled it together in a way that I did not think it would.
Mm-hmm.
I am shocked how much I loved it. I am a little skeptical about where things are going, though.
Me too. No, I'll say I'm not particularly excited.
They got a lot of work to do.
They got to pick themselves up. Because, I mean, I don't know. It'd be nice if they could just leave it where it is. I know they're not going to do it, but it'd be nice if someone understood, you know, why we love the ending of Breaking Bad so much in a way.
See, I don't love the ending of Breaking Bad.
Oh, I love that ending.
Do you?
Yeah.
All right, that's for another podcast. Wow, way to bring it to Breaking Bad now. Now I want to have a 2-hour debate with you about why I'm disappointed by the ending of Breaking Bad.
Everybody loves the ending of Breaking Bad.
Wrong, dude.
You're like the one person who doesn't like it.
Yeah, they're wrong. Everybody's wrong.
Why?
Do you want to do that? No, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to engage you. We'll do another podcast about why the ending of Breaking Bad is horribly unsatisfying and they should have ended after Ozymandias.
Okay.
You like the ending?
Yeah.
It's just like the most predictable, put a neat bow on the end of things, unsurprising, unambitious. Really? You like the ending of Breaking Bad? It's just nothingness.
I mean, it's satisfying for that character.
It's just Walter comes around and kills a bunch of people and then dies.
It's
spoiler alert for Breaking Bad. Sorry, guys.
Not much different than the ending of Endgame in that way, then.
Yeah, but Endgame is not Breaking Bad, dude. Breaking Bad is one of the, like, most ambitious television shows of all time, and Avengers is another story about a man in tights.
Yeah, but it's part of one of the most important film franchise in modern cinema.
Yeah, but I don't go into Endgame expecting to be shocked in the way that an episode of Breaking Bad shocks me.
I don't care if it's somewhat predictable. It doesn't mean it's not satisfying.
It didn't say anything. Satisfying on a plot level is different from being satisfying on a thematic level.
Yeah.
The end of Breaking Bad did not have to happen. It didn't teach me anything new about the story.
All right. You don't think he earned that at the end?
Earned what?
I don't, like a peaceful outing?
No, he's a bad person who did bad things to his family. He was selfish. He deserved to suffer. Time, I cannot believe an hour and a half into a fucking podcast about Avengers, we're going to debate Breaking Bad. But we're doing it. I'll play your little game, baby. Let's go. Breaking Bad for 5 seasons subverted expectations.
Yes.
That was its whole premise. How many times have we seen the same old guy does bad thing, but then the cowboy returns home and redeems himself story?
Mm-hmm.
How many times have we seen that? And how many times every step along the way has Breaking Bad subverted the expectation of that story?
I mean, all the time, I guess.
So then why are we ending with the same old fucking Unforgiven ending?
I don't know.
Where he comes back home, saves the day, and actually, Walter White wasn't that bad a guy after all. Dude, that's bullshit, man. That's a cop-out. It's a cop-out ending.
Maybe.
It's a cop-out ending for the sake of satisfaction, quote-unquote. I don't need satisfaction. I need you to teach me something. Surprise me, shock me, punch me in the gut.
You got that out of Ozymandias, though?
Certainly.
Okay.
Certainly.
So what's wrong with that? I don't know.
Because we had 2 more episodes after Ozymandias.
So what?
You're missing my point.
I don't know. I really don't feel that way.
You're missing my point. It was too neat. There was too much of a bow on it. And it wasn't in line with the rest of the show.
It didn't feel out of place to me at all. Yeah. I don't know.
They give the stupid ricin pack to Lydia. It's like this great... remember the ricin package that Jesse had? And it was like this big, like, Chekhov's gun throughout the entire show since season 2. And it sort of symbolized the decay of Walter and Jesse's relationship and their distrust for each other. And then they just take this incredible symbol and waste it on the most boring character on the show who entered in the back half of season 5?
Okay.
Dude, fuck that, dude.
There's something kind of bleak about it that just kind of worked for me.
What was bleak about it? What?
I don't know. There's just something about the image of him dead there in the lab, just looking all pathetic.
The same aerial shot that we have seen in every other noir western? Come on, dude.
Ugh. No, it works. I'm sorry. What do you want from me? It's like, maybe some muddled thematic stuff, I suppose.
More than muddled, just it was nothingness. Like they didn't make a choice. That's the problem.
Well, they made a choice.
The show didn't. No, it didn't.
What do you mean it didn't make a choice?
The show punted on the choice. The show had a chance.
It makes the choice to commit to that kind of satisfying ending for this character, clearly.
That's not a choice.
What do you mean it's not a choice?
Okay, put it this way. It's the easy choice.
There you go.
How about that? Is that better?
Fine. Sure.
It's the easy choice.
Okay.
Nice and neat. We're going to end it. We're going to wrap a little bow. Everybody gets to feel good about the fact they rooted for this monster for 5 seasons.
But you do root for the monster for 5 seasons, you know?
I'm in the camp that the ending of The Sopranos should be the ending of everything. Surprise me, shock me, make me think. Breaking Bad just said, all that thinking you did in the first 5 seasons, we're done thinking. Mm-hmm. Let's just have a stupid shoot 'em up episode for an hour.
Weak. For an hour?
It was weak. Eh. Weak.
I don't know about that.
I'm sorry I'm right about this. I can't wait to have the Interstellar debate in a few weeks, too.
Well, you're not going to win that one.
We'll see.
How many times have you seen Interstellar?
Just once. Just the one.
All right.
Can't wait to do it again, though. That's coming on Why Is This a Thing?
You got to like watch it and then rewatch it and then find out why it's garbage. You know, because I watched that thing and I'm like, I don't know what that was, but maybe I like it. And I watched it again. I was like, okay, yeah, that's not good. And then I watched it again. I was like, oh, this movie sucks.
You've watched it 3 times?
Yeah.
Well, then how can I possibly debate that? You've watched Interstellar 3 times?
And I'm like, yeah.
And you hated the movie.
Yeah. Trying to understand why it was so bad. It's like, why is this movie not working?
Man, I understand you now more perfectly than I ever have before. You just put yourself through that after. Why would you watch a movie that you hated 3 times?
I didn't hate it on my first 2 viewings. It took my 3rd viewing to realize, yeah, no, this movie is offensive as hell.
We'll talk about that on Why Is This a Thing this week, or next week, I should say. We're doing The Beach Bum this week. McConaughey is the theme going on that podcast. Subscribe on the website, tmt.media, or toomanythoughtsmedia.com. Me, you, Zach, Nick. It's a fun time over there.
Mm-hmm.
Check out that podcast. Also, check out Cultured. I'll be doing a breakdown of, I guess, a little bit of Avengers talk. That's on that podcast. Also, some stuff about Game of Thrones and the newest episode of Barry, which somehow was the best battle sequence on television last night.
You didn't like that one?
The Barry battle sequence was better than the Game of Thrones battle sequence.
What did you like about Game of Thrones battle sequence?
Well, you can find out if you listen to Cultured this week. How do you like that, Adam Hall?
Was it too satisfying?
We'll get there.
My criticism.
What an interesting debate that we came into at the last second. You want things to be satisfying, and I'm okay if they're not.
Which is weird, because I like It Comes at Night.
Fair point.
It just depends. I don't know. It depends on the story.
Check out all that stuff. We're going to do Movie Hall of Fame next week. We'll finally get to the year 1992, and I will decide with sole power which movie from that year is getting into the Movie Hall of Fame.
I find it hard to believe that you would pick Glengarry Glen Ross.
We will see.
But Jesus.
You never know.
Jesus.
Listen to the Movie Hall of Fame next week for more.
You're going
to
tear us apart.
Nico Show, 2 Cents Radio, all available on the website. Subscribe, rate 5 stars. You know the deal by now, kiddies. Until next time, Adam Hall.
Happy movie hopping?
Sure.
Okay.